Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Monday, June 29th, 2020. Boy, I'll tell you, just a stocked and packed show for you today. You know, a couple of things. I'll tell you what. The Bush-appointed turncoat, Justice John Roberts, joins the liberals again. The brain-dead progressives blocks Louisiana pro-life law. All right, 5-4 decision that just absolutely makes no sense. The Supreme Court struck down the abortion restrictions. Roberts joins liberals in a 5-4 split, according this earlier today on the Drudge Report. You know, look, folks, I'm going to tell you, this is just absolutely incredibly profane. Profane is the only thing I can think of. And you know, Jim Jordan earlier today sent out a tweet. What's next, Justice Roberts? The Second Amendment? Our Second Amendment rights? Yeah, that's what's next. You're doggone right, that's what's next. But today, Monday morning, this morning, the Supreme Court struck down along party lines, pretty much. Well, I shouldn't say along party lines. Along biased lines, struck down the the Louisiana law regulating abortion clinics. 5-4 ruling. The so-called conservative Justice John Roberts, so-called because he's been nothing like that. He sided with the obvious 4 progressive brain dead Muppets. And he determined that the law that requires doctors who perform infanticide have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals violates the abortion right. The court first published in the Roe v. Wade decision back in 1973. So, this Louisiana law is similar to the one in Texas that the court struck down back 3 years ago, making this the first big abortion case of the President Trump era. And it's not good. It's not good. None of this is good. Just so you know. By the way, a couple more things. This program is not going to get any better in terms of information or in terms of good news, shall we say. The garden gnome, Fauci, goes full bore to deny science by claiming that herd immunity is unlikely if enough people refuse the coronavirus vaccine. A lot of information about Black Lives Matter, a lot of things taking place, all across the country, including, did you see this? I'll just say it this way. Get off my lawn. You want to see your future? You can go to conservativetreehouse.com, theconservativetreehouse.com, theconservativetreehouse. And you can see what it looks like when a Missouri mob of looters, rioters, go to the wrong house, the wrong street. A couple came out. Actually, they own a law firm, the occupants of this house. By the way, it's a mansion, and it's a historical, they applied to put it on the historical registry. But this mob went down this private road in Missouri, and I'm going to be talking to John Moore about this because I want to get his take on this. This article appears at the Conservative Treehouse, in my view anyway, the best laid out information in terms of the article, in terms of the facts. And you can, in fact, I don't know. Do we, okay, let's play this video clip. Because this is going to, what I want to show you is what is coming to you. I told you 7 years ago, it's going to get really ugly. Well, maybe I was just a little bit ahead of my time. For that, I apologize. But this is coming to you. The video clip, I don't know how long it is. Maybe 30 seconds or a minute, if that. It's 30. I guess we'll just go right to the spoiler and, or spoiler part. And we don't have to play the extraneous stuff. Watch this.
Keep moving!
So that's what happens when you have a mob of people going down the wrong street. You've got, instead of people, you know, taking to their knees, you know, you've got a guy coming out to defend his home and a woman coming out to defend her home. And of course, the Twitter universe out there, the people are just having conniption fits, obviously, pointing out in among other things, maybe the only valid thing that they could point out is the lack of muzzle discipline that is exercised by both of them. Beyond that, that couple was very well disciplined in their use of firearms, because Missouri has a very strong castle doctrine laws, as pointed out by the Conservative Treehouse. They don't require the duty of the homeowner to retreat from the threat. Remember I had mentioned the furthest wall doctrine? In other words, you've got to retreat to the furthest wall of your house. And I'm oversimplifying the situation. Meaning you've got to retreat until you can't retreat anymore. And then, okay, then you can fire. Mm-mm. Missouri, mm-mm. They've got a very strong castle doctrine law. And the states have most of this. I don't want to say most. Check your state laws, but Missouri is one where they've got a tremendous latitude. Once the mob really got on that private road, once they broke through that gate, and you can go in Conservative Treehouse, you can see, I think if you expand the story, you can see the gate. You can see the various pictures. But I'm telling you right now, this is not going to end well. That's what they want, and that's what they're going to get. John Moore from thelibertyman.com. You know what? Eric the Tech, have I been doing this wrong? Is it .com or .net?
It's .com.
All right. I got a couple of emails saying, oh, you moron. It's .net. John Moore, how are you? I'm John Moore from thelibertyman.com. How are you, sir?
Morning, Doug. I am excellent. How are you?
This is fabulous. So, Missouri, I just kind of want to start off with this. Domestic terrorism. Missouri couple defends their home from rampaging mob who broke through the perimeter gate on private property. You guys have this very strong castle doctrine laws that don't require you to say, hey, get off my lawn. Or retreat from the threat. Did you happen to see that, by the way?
I was just watching the video just now. I've seen some earlier. And, in the city, these protesters were marching or walking towards the home of the mayor, Lida Krusen. I'm very familiar with that part of St. Louis. Those homes were built typically around the turn of the century. St. Louis was one of the wealthiest cities in the United States at the time, and that neighborhood was the wealthiest neighborhood in the wealthiest city. You really can't tell the size of these homes until you're looking down from an aerial view. I've seen elementary schools that are as big as some of these homes. I mean, they're in hotels. They're massive with 5,000 and 6,000 and 8,000 square feet, stone, structures. And the streets are private streets. They perform their own street maintenance. They take care of their own lighting. It's private property. Once they leave the city of St. Louis streets and enter those streets and sidewalks, they're on private property. They're not on public property. And, there were some comments about, sidewalk lawyers. The protesters thought they were still on public property and were walking on the sidewalk, but they weren't. They were on private property. I don't know the owners of the home, but I'm almost without a doubt, since I'm connected to the legal community, I know people that know them. They did not exercise very good muzzle discipline, as you mentioned. The woman's handling that pistol like a child with a squirt gun. They're very undisciplined. The husband, a little bit better.
At least he's got his finger off the trigger. At least that.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely. And he's obviously scared. And if you see a mob walking down your street, where typically nobody ever walks down those streets except the local people out taking their dog out or something like that, that would be very concerning. Of course it would. And being an attorney, he probably knows that there is no insurance for any damage due to civil disorder. So he was doing the right thing. I'm not sure what help the wife was being out there. I'm not sure she added anything to it, but she was out there. And it became national news. I doubt most people don't want to be national news on something like this. It's not something to be proud of.
Their names, by the way, I just want to tell you this. These leftist lunatics doxed the couple, put their names out there on Twitter and on social media. Now they're being referred to, folks, just in case you missed it, as Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is trending. And, of course, they're the subject of ridicule. Right. But that in and of itself has threatened them, I believe. Let me tell you, they're going to need more magazines and more ammo. Go ahead. I'm just really peeved.
What they need is more firepower. They need some friends and relatives who are qualified to be there and be armed, or maybe hire some off-duty police officer or something of that nature. The mayor clearly has become a target. Now, the mayor, Lyda Crewson, her husband was shot to death in front of her and her children in an attempted carjacking before she became politically active. That was the impetus for her to become politically active and to become very, very anti-gun, by the way. She's extremely anti-gun. This will not be an isolated incident. There's a high likelihood that protesters will attempt to go down that street again. And I hope that the homeowners will have gates that can be closed and locked to prevent that from happening and be better prepared than these two people were for further incidents. And, Doug, most people in the media believe that these protests are spontaneous outpourings of people emotional about George Floyd being killed in that incident in Minneapolis. That's not the motivation. The motivation is to get the violent pushback. They want the violent pushback. Now, here's what happened in my neighborhood. I'm in South Central Missouri. I got a call Friday night that Antifa Black Lives Matter was going to be in a small community of Eminence, Missouri, the county seat of Shannon County. This is a county so remote and so heavily wooded that there's herds of wild horses running about and have been for many, many decades. That's the only report I got on that until we had people on the highway the next day We thought they'd be traveling past my home, about 7 miles from my home on Highway 19, going towards Eminence. We had people holding the Confederate battle flag along that road from about 10 a.m. till noon, which would have been the time they would have passed, not knowing that they'd already passed that point and were in Salem, Missouri, Friday night to make their travel to Eminence, Missouri. Now, it was one bus with about 40 protesters, Black Lives Matter, Antifa people. They were being followed around by patriots, and when they got to Eminence, there were 400 patriots waiting for them. Nothing happened. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got killed. So it didn't make the news. It was not newsworthy for those reasons. So they got I don't know what they expected when they got to Eminence, and the word we got was their intention was to damage or destroy a monument. We don't know what monument, probably Civil War. I've been to Eminence several times. I know some Civil War cannons on the courthouse lawn, and I never really paid attention to any Civil War monuments, but there's a high likelihood that there is, since there are so numerous around the country. But they didn't achieve their goal of damaging anything, of getting violent pushback. They were outnumbered 10 to 1, at least 10 to 1, and so they got on their bus and left and went back to wherever they came from. We believe St. Louis, but it could have been Kansas City. It could have been any place. We don't know where they came from. So that's been a motivating factor for the men and women in my neighborhood to get better prepared and to deal with anything that comes our way. We're a pretty remote area here, but we're not taking any chances, and we will be prepared to deal with anything that happens in our county, at our county courthouse. Our county courthouse, Doug, has a 5-foot-tall stone cross right in the middle of the lawn in front of the courthouse, and across the front of the courthouse in foot-tall black letters on white background, it says, "In God We Trust." So I think that easily could become a target of the communists because of the cross, the stone cross on the lawn, and "In God We Trust" on the front of the courthouse. And we will effectively deal with that if it ever happens. They will be shown the way out of town very quickly.
Bloodless?
Hopefully. The sheriff will do what he needs to do. I have dinner with the sheriff once a month. He's a great guy, former Marine. He understands the Constitution, very strong Second Amendment guy. And he'll do whatever it takes to preserve innocent life and property. He will not let our courthouse be damaged. I assure you of that. And it will remain bloodless as long as whoever comes in from out of town does not commit acts of violence, such as throwing rocks or doing anything that could harm another human being. Once they do, and I don't speak on behalf of the sheriff, obviously, but a rock the size of a baseball can kill a man. And I'm sure the sheriff recognizes that and will act accordingly.
All right. Yeah. Well, you know, I find this very interesting, what I see taking place. Although that's I believe we have a right to protect ourselves, our property, and the property that we've paid for, including but not limited to those of religious significance or spiritual significance or whatever. But look, what concerns me is, and this news keeps getting worse and worse and worse in, Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Now, this was published, I think it was earlier today as well. A 20-year-old young man, his name is Lucas Gerhard, posted a picture of his rifle on social media. Now, this was some time ago, actually. The hearing, or he was actually charged with terror charges. Okay, so follow me on this. 20-year-old Lucas Gerhard was charged with terror charges for posting a picture of his rifle on social media. Now, there was no threat. There was no implied threat, to my understanding, based on everything I've read about this and Big League Politics, or I'm sorry, Blunt Force Truth was the originally reported on this. But the court reportedly denied a request made by this young man's lawyer to record the proceedings and broadcast them on the internet for full disclosure. But you have to understand too, this 20-year-old young man is a, I believe he's a cadet, ROTC perhaps, but nonetheless, what was his crime? He posted an image that essentially triggered a far left moron on campus. And, because that person was scared by a picture of a firearm with, there was some text making fun of liberal snowflakes, not threatening, but just making fun of liberal morons. This guy is now facing 20 years in prison as a result, this young man. So, you know, we could talk justice and law and order all day long, but when I see stories like this, John, I get really, really upset. It was Big League Politics, by the way, that initially reported on this. And this happened on June 11th, the hearing, that is, and or the charges. But the picture was posted back in August of 2019, just to clarify.
Well, I got some more clarification on what happened in St. Louis. Apparently, and I know that neighborhood, they did, the protesters did break down the gate. So they damaged property to enter the gated community. And, the moment they did that, they were trespassing after having, it was Portland Place. Well, right across the street, my parents almost bought number one Portland Place. Back in the, oh, it would have been, 1950s, I guess it was, or so. Yeah, they looked at number one Portland Place, which is directly across the street from this place, with the intention of possibly buying it. So yes, I know the neighborhood. I was thinking it might be Portland Place, and of course it is. Yeah, I know the neighborhood quite well.
That's a street.
I could have been there.
Yeah.
I could have been there. If my parents had bought number one Portland Place, I could have been sitting there.
It would. Small world, isn't it? Well,
small world.
I have a feeling you won't have to, you know, you won't have to move to go there to experience what we're about to experience, because I think what we're seeing right now, until someone, you know, it's all fun and games until someone, you know, breaks out in the AR-15 and someone gets shot. It's all fun and games. I'm going to tell you, not really fun and games. I'm making light of it. But the bottom line here is what I see taking place is you're going to have a couple that will be legitimately afraid for their lives seeing this group of thugs come through. And again, they were in a private street. It's a public sidewalk. No, it's not. It's private property. You can see the images. So anyway, John, they knowingly went through a private a gate posted. You can
well,
see
they destroyed private property, the gate, to get into the street. So that's a crime in and of itself. So they're all participants in a crime by breaking down the gate and then trespassing on private property.
Right. But, okay. You know, and when I start looking and start digging into Black Lives Matter, for example, and you start tracing back who these people or who's funding these people, who these people really are. I mean, the connections to Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, Rosenberg, for example. You know, we've got to pay attention to the connections. And I believe this is really the last, not the last, but the coming on the closing side of this communist push against middle America. I really believe that. And I believe that we're going to see, I don't think anything can stop this. What's coming, I don't believe anything can stop this short of everyone repenting, praying, and saying, you know, God, please intervene. That's my view.
What took place on Portland Place easily could have become a massive bloodbath, easily, with 8, 10 or more people dead and many more wounded, easily could have happened. And these incidents are happening all over the country, similar. And it's inevitable that the blood will start flowing. I don't see any way around it, Doug. I really don't. I wish I did, but I don't see any way around it. There's just too many moving pieces that with the possibility of it going south really easy at any one of these places where these protesters are damaging property, threatening people. And The protesters want violent pushback. That's their goal. They want violence. They want their own people to be shot and wounded and killed to get this whole thing rolling. And once it starts, it will take on a life of its own, Doug.
I'm not too sure. I was going to say I'm not too sure that's a bad thing. Of course that's a bad thing. I'm not too sure that we have the ability as a population, because of the influx of people with absolutely 100% different or 180 degree different ideologies than us, us meaning normal, sensible human beings with values, God-given rights, values. There's too much of an ideological divide that was created for this purpose. So we could not coexist. This is my view. You know how we brought in back in the early 19th or 20th century, early 1900s, we brought in people with similar ideological values. Not anymore. Now they're starkly different. We're bringing in communists. We have been since the early to mid 60s, and especially after 65. And this is done to mold the population, to pit the population against the people that value God, guns, and guts, I suppose, just to make it short. So when there's that much of a chasm, when there's that much of a divide, John, I don't see how we can avoid what's coming. Somebody, please change my mind. I humbly ask, change my mind. I just don't see it happening. I just don't.
I think this attorney's sister may have been my next door neighbor at one time. I seem to recall that.
Wow.
Well, regardless, we got through that incident with no bloodshed and no extensive property damage. That gate, I'm sure, has been repaired and hopefully reinforced to withstand another assault. And hopefully that the McCluskeys will be better prepared to deal with this in a more effective way than what they did a couple of days ago.
Can you imagine, though?
Well, in addition, a few blocks from there is St. Louis Art Museum. In front of that is a statue of King Louis IX, St. Louis. The communists want to tear down the statue of St. Louis, Louis IX. And now we've had a standoff there between a Catholic men's security, they call themselves safety team, I think, praying the rosary, standing off against the communists who want to tear down the statue of Louis IX and rename St. Louis something else, by the way. That's how crazy this has become. That's how crazy it's become. It's absolutely insane.
Well, and again, when we look at the unrest that's taking place all across America, this is planned. And you and I spoke about this last week. I believe that this was planned to come at this point in time in terms of, well, you know, hey, Russiagate failed. You know, the surveillance failed. Donald Trump failed. Russiagate failed. Ukrainegate failed. The Mueller investigation failed to get Donald Trump out of office. And I can keep going. Now you have the coronavirus that is very convenient timing. By the way, folks, in the event that you're wondering where the video feed is, I had a procedure done earlier today, so I apologize for that at the doctor's office. And so not up to 100% the video. But anyway, look. The ties right now that we've seen from Black Lives Matter to Antifa, John, I'm telling you, when you start looking at who's behind this, if there was any question whatsoever whether Black Lives Matter had ideological ties to the communist terrorists of the 60s, just look at Susan Rosenberg. That should answer all questions. Rosenberg, she started out, for those who don't know, she was a member of the Weather Underground, and then she went into different types of terrorism back in the 70s and 80s. And John, remember when the Capitol building was bombed? Did you remember that? There was a bomb.
United States Capitol?
Yes. This is back in 83 now. And, you know, I don't remember that. And I don't know why.
I don't recall that happening. I really don't.
Okay, so it was September. I'll educate you on this because I found this fascinating. Folks, did you know it's November 7th of 1983? Okay, so there was a bomb in a duffel bag that was placed under a bench outside the Senate chamber that went off. Again, November 7th of 1983. And it damaged part of the wall, a cratered wall, and it broke some chandeliers and damaged the portrait of John Calhoun. Well, that gets traced back to Susan Rosenberg, among other people, and the thousand currents, C-U-R-R-E-N-T-S. Okay, which gets traced back to, if you put all this together, you can find connections to the Weather Underground and that communist ideology. So then you look at the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation and, where they're getting money from. Black Lives Matter BLM Global Network Foundation has been a fiscally supported project of Thousand Currents, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And that goes back to 2016, which means BLM, which runs the BlackLivesMatter.com website, it's not a 501c3, but it's connected with an organization that is a 501c3, which is Thousand Currents. And then when you start tracing the money back, you can see the communist roots. Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi, the founders. Cullors, by the way, recently went online and said, hey, we are trained Marxists. So, I don't know. Trained Marxists and capitalists, we can't coexist any more than Christianity and Islam can coexist. Fundamental Islam and fundamental Christianity can coexist. That's my view. I don't know. Again, prove me wrong. Please prove me wrong.
Well, I'm not going to be one to even attempt to do that because I absolutely agree with you there, Doug.
Well, you know, and here again, we're seeing the Obama. And you know what, John? I don't understand how many people don't realize the ties. Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn to Obama, and Valerie Jarrett, and even at the periphery of Hillary Clinton and the DNC, the Democratic Party. These people are Marxists. They're communists. And here we are. And so 8 years of Obama fundamentally transforming America, here we are. Yeah. So anyway, that's just me going on, but I don't know, brother. I'm seeing some between now and the election. I see some things getting really dicey. So.
Well, we're looking at 4 months and, this 4 months will pass very quickly. And I don't know how bad things will get. I know how bad things could get. And, it could be absolutely an absolute disaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Look, I don't think anyone can really predict what's going to happen this election. I've seen polls and all polls stink. I mean, I haven't seen any polls that are decent, but you know, so everyone says, well, oh, Donald Trump is going to be elected. And well, all right. What do we see today? What came out today or yesterday? It wasn't today. It was over the weekend sometime where we had, the case in New Jersey, Paterson, New Jersey. Four councilmen were arrested or charged. Paterson City Councilman Michael Jackson, a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Councilman-elect Alex Mendez, a Democrat. Shalim Kalike, it reminds me of Christmas Vacation. Anyway, and Abu Razian, they were arrested and charged with ballot fraud. So mail-in ballots. Oh, everything's fine. Yeah, no, no. 19% of ballots. No, this is a fraud. I mean, 800 votes were found in a mailbox. I mean, the mailbox is plural. This is crazy. So anyway, I'm looking toward I'm looking at this as well, you know, this election fraud year after year. We see this, and it doesn't get any better. Remember Brenda Snipes, the Broward County Supervisor of Elections? Remember her, that woman who said, oh, you know, she was in charge of Broward County election ballots, and she eventually, what, she was forced to resign or something. I don't remember. But anyway, right. Yeah. So we got that to contend with as well. Just full of good news.
Aren't we, though?
Yeah. But don't let me dominate. Feel free to jump in here anytime and help me out and tell me that I'm, you know, that, and then John too. Okay. So today we saw the U.S. Supreme Court striking down a Louisiana abortion law saying, oh, no. Chief Justice Roberts joined this, the progressive liberal lunatics in the 5-4 ruling. So we see additional, ideological beliefs and spiritual beliefs being this country divided upon those. So, you know, here we are. And I don't know. So between what we saw this weekend, between the Supreme Court, between these morons wanting to defund police, between, by the way, blue flu, you know, it's, I don't blame them. I don't blame the police for blue flu. Homicides up 378% over the, I think it was over the last 12 months in New York City. John, we had, how many children, or I think 3 children were dead in, Chicago, 47 shootings this weekend, 46 or 47 yeah. shootings.
Well, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to top what they did the weekend before. Those were numbers similar to what, even worse, what we had in a typical day in Vietnam, quite frankly. Concentrated in a much smaller area, obviously, than the entire country of Vietnam. You know, those are war-like casualties, war-like numbers. And, Chicago is a major city, 12 million plus people in metropolitan Chicago. There's neighborhoods where you could be born, live your entire life and die and never speak anything but Polish. There's neighborhoods where you could be born, live your entire life, and never need to speak anything but Spanish. And these enclaves are very insular, and of course, the south side of Chicago is mostly African American, and that's where the majority of these shootings, fatalities take place, is the south side of Chicago. Some of the guys in my outfit, two of them were from the south side of Chicago, black guys, and you know, it's almost like they're from a different country with the values they have, the things they believe, the way they act, it's almost like they're from another country in all those things. Great guys. I got along with them fine myself. And, we work together well and all that. But the, growing up in that part of Chicago is different than most of the country, to say the least.
Okay. When you say different, so black lives don't matter in that part of Chicago or Chicago itself at large, or am I wrong? I mean,
well, Black Lives Matter is a Marxist organization started by a Canadian Marxist. And
yeah,
that's almost a side issue. Now you're making fun of it, but, more than probably 3/4 of the young men there grow up without a father in a home. And, that's a consequence of white men passing laws that, financially reward illiterate teenage girls to have babies, both white and black, by the way, of course. As Rush Limbaugh said many, many years ago, any human activity you financially reward, you get more of it. Any human activity you financially punish, you get less of it. The black community before the Lyndon Johnson administration and the war on poverty and all that mess had a babies born out of wedlock, roughly similar to whites. The percentage of black couples being married, roughly similar to whites. And We being whites, our white politicians, I should say, led by Lyndon Johnson, passed laws that absolutely destroyed the black community and much of the white community also. There's many illiterate teenage white girls having babies out of wedlock also with no husband present because they're taking advantage of the same laws that the black families are. It's literally destroying our country, literally. Children need fathers, boys and girls both. Typically, the girls don't get involved in violent crime when they're raised without a father. They get involved in other things. But the boys are the ones that become the violent criminal offenders when they're raised without a father. That's predictable, that's knowable, and it affects both white communities and black communities. And in my career as a criminal investigator, I realized that very quickly, many of the clients that I had that were charged with crimes grew up in a home with a father not being present. And these were mostly white, by the way. Most of my work involved defending white men that were white charged with crimes. So it works both ways, white and black. When you pass laws that financially reward teenage girls to have babies with no father in the home, no husband, they're going to do that. And we're doing it to ourselves, Doug. We pass laws that fly in the face of thousands of years of human activity, human communities, the way human beings should be forming communities and taking care of each other. Laws and money have destroyed that, largely. Not completely, but largely. Another thing, Doug, passage of laws that make it really easy to get divorced. They call it no-fault divorce. I was just getting the system back in 72, 73 when no-fault divorce was just coming in. And it was like somebody threw a light switch, the number of people getting divorced. Once women, it was mostly almost probably 90% of all divorces are filed by women, by the way, in case you don't know. 95%. It's a huge percentage. Once women figured out they no longer needed a reason to get divorced, they started filing for divorce.
All right. I wasn't aware of that stat. As crazy as that sounds, given the profession that I've been in, no, I was not aware of that. The majority, if not, 95% is a high number. So
if there's children involved, the men almost never file divorce. It's a biological thing. The women know that the law is in their favor to get custody of the children. And they go ahead and do it. And it destroys families. It destroys lives. It destroys our culture, this no-fault divorce. And I haven't looked into it, but if I did, I think I would find the people promoting it, the people behind it, back in the late 60s, early 70s, were Marxists themselves, because their goal is to destroy our society and destroy our culture. And I don't have evidence. I have not looked into it. But it would be consistent with the communist goal of destroying our country, destroying our culture.
You know, you're exactly right. I was reaching for, I did an interview. I was reaching for a book called Crushing the Collective. I did an interview some time ago with Charles Sasser, who wrote that book. The subtitle is The Last Chance to Keep America Free and Self-Governing. And he gets into the social issues, like you just mentioned about divorce and about the family and about, the ideology, you know, and it's amazing to me. Again, I use the word amazing. I'm dumbstruck, I guess. When I look when I look over and I see how badly fractured this country is, how badly fractured we are. And you're right. You know, when you start taking the Bible out of school, when you start going away from having a moral society, when all of this is ripped out of, you take the Ten Commandments off the courthouse wall and Bible out of schools, and this is what's left. So it's really a spiritual problem, and is. Steve Quayle and others have said, you know, you can't fix spiritual problems there are no political solutions to spiritual problems, and we have a big spiritual problem.
No, but there are political ways to create spiritual problems.
Yes.
And that's what's happened. That's what's happened. Another example of destroying our culture and our economy, in the late 60s, the decision was made to no longer keep mentally ill people in safe and secure locations where they could not harm themselves or anybody else. Instead, turn them loose with a monthly income and a prescription for psychotropic drugs. That instantly created a nationwide homeless problem. Instantly.
Yep.
And it continues to this day. The compassionate, proper way to care for people who are mentally ill is what we've done for many decades. And the decision to discontinue that instantly created the nationwide homeless problem, many of whom, of course, are people who will commit crimes. Massive, massive mistake. And we're living the consequences of things that decisions made half a century ago with the war on poverty, opening up the mental health institutions, making mainstreaming mental illness. Now, there was a lot of concern last week, I believe it was, that companies can no longer fire people because they're homosexual. Well, there's another part to that. They're mentally ill. A man who's sexually attracted to another man is mentally ill. A woman attracted to another woman sexually is mentally ill. That's the reason they need to be fired, not because they're homosexual, but because they're mentally ill. And we're now seeing a requirement that you maintain on the payroll mentally ill people. How crazy is that, Doug?
Yes, yes. I'm just thinking about the emails that we're going to get. But you're right. Wasn't the attraction to the same sex, homosexuality, wasn't that listed in the DSM? The
it was, but they cut simply because they cut the page out of the book doesn't make it go away.
No. Right. But yeah. No. But at one time that was listed.
It was
as a mental illness.
Right.
Okay.
But the politically correct thing to do was to cut that page out.
Right.
You know.
Right.
A man who believes his Napoleon is mentally ill, and I'm sure the manual says so. But if they cut the page out, he's no longer mentally ill.
Or believes, you know, yeah, a white guy who believes he's black or vice versa, or a guy who believes he's a giraffe, you know, it's okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
or Elizabeth Warren thinks she's an Indian. Yeah.
That's true. You know, and you're right about the, institutions. Now, I will say this, that I believe that, that there's been this push to, by the state and capitalist state nation to, or by the Marxist, I should say, or by the communist to, for this collective care from birth to death. We're going to provide for you. And of course, that's the communist ideology.
And go out to Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, see how well that's working.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got firsthand knowledge of that, obviously. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't work.
I was there. I was at Wounded Knee.
Yeah. You want to expand on that? Because people, I'm sure there's a group of individuals out there, given our fantastic Common Core curriculum, saying, Wounded Knee, what's that?
Well, that was the winter of 72-73 that American Indians occupied a trading post at Wounded Knee.
Pennsylvania.
South Dakota.
South
Dakota. And the time I was working with the Vietnam Vets Against the War, we had a lot of members who were active duty, and we were getting reports of 82nd Airborne being put on alert to go there, and they were already using military aircraft for surveillance purposes. And regardless, the men and women I worked with, we decided to transport medical supplies from St. Louis to Wounded Knee. My first wife, a registered nurse, could pass as an American Indian. She didn't claim to be, but she had coal black hair and high cheekbones and a dark complexion. They brought her to the Indians took her to the last staging area where they were taking supplies and men and women in and out of Wounded Knee at night under cover of darkness. And she was there providing medical aid for several days while I waited in Rapid City for her to return. There was one of the Indians, I think, was shot to death while I was there. The international press was there from all over the world covering it.
Yeah.
It's human nature that if you provide cradle to grave care, what happens? The American Indians basically returned from very proud, self-reliant people into mostly worthless drunks. There's many notable exceptions, obviously. But that's what we did to them, with cradle to grave care. Later on, my first wife worked, as a public health nurse in the Southwest with Indians also. And that's what's being, that's what's destroyed the black community is cradle to grave care, obviously slightly different than reservations. And that's what's being proposed by the Democrats, cradle to grave care, where the government takes care of your basic needs. And we're seeing the proposals doing just that, a monthly stipend for every person in this country, universal health care. I don't agree with what they call health care, and free or next to free subsidized housing. They're basically duplicating what was done in the 19th century with the American Indians, which destroyed the American Indian people, their culture, their everything that they were part of for so many centuries was wiped out by that cradle-to-grave care on these reservations. And the Democrats want to expand that to the entire country.
Well, yeah, they're looking for this, I don't know, this vague, if you will, social utopia. Somewhere beyond the rainbow or over the rainbow kind of thing, and interesting choice of words, I suppose. But yes, it's not, certainly not equality of opportunity that people are looking for.
Well, they want equality of outcome, not
yes.
equality.
Yeah. Yes, precisely.
And, yeah, that's a disaster. If you want to destroy a country, that's exactly how you do it.
Well, and I think you made some great points. And yes, you know what? I don't know where Pennsylvania came from when you said Wounded Knee. My goodness, I don't know. But by the way, that did happen back in February through the spring of 73. In fact, I have it right here. February 27th of May 73. Go ahead and folks, research the Wounded Knee incident, but not by way of Wikipedia, please.
Vietnam vets from all over the country were transporting medical supplies and other things to the Indians at Wounded Knee.
Right.
A number of them were arrested as they crossed state lines to do that. I wasn't, but I was fully aware that that could have happened to me. Transporting medical supplies across state lines, that's certainly a crime. In fact, we made two trips. The second trip, we held a press conference in direct line of sight with the FBI office in St. Louis on the steps of the Soldier Memorial in St. Louis with TV cameras running and everything. Basically, publicly announcing we were ready to commit a federal crime by crossing state lines, transporting medical supplies to the Indians at Wounded Knee. That had to be, a kick in the teeth to the FBI that us criminals, us 22-year-old Vietnam vets, were prepared to cross state lines to transport medical supplies to Indians in need. And that was our goal. That was our goal, was to be in their face.
And, right.
Most criminals certainly attempt to conceal their criminal activity. Yep. We were proud of our criminal activity. And I could walk down there right now and stand on the steps of Soldier Memorial and say, Doug, over there is the FBI office where they were, headquarters at the time. So that's what we did, and we were proud of it. And Vietnam vets from all over the country were participating in that.
Exactly. And And again, folks, there's a lesson there, kind of a divergent lesson, but a lesson nonetheless. So, but you were talking earlier about, what I would say, I guess I would describe this as a victim kind of mentality that we are, afflicted with in the United States. You know, if you, an entitlement mentality too. But everyone seems to be afflicted.
It's easy to appeal to that.
Yes, yes.
Especially with what's been done, you know, very few people under age 50 anymore, unless they've had education other than public schools, a very small percentage enjoy reading, read for pleasure. They don't, because they weren't taught how to read properly. They weren't. And, They weren't taught phonics. They have a limited vocabulary, a limited ability to read. And unless they somehow helped themselves some way, they're crippled as far as reading the rest of their lives. And this includes my daughter and my son-in-law. They're great people. They're productive. They're great parents. They work hard. They have a nice home. But neither one of them reads for pleasure. They're graduates of the public schools. They weren't taught phonics. And it's easier to control a semi-literate population. About half the adults in this country are either completely or semi-literate. And it's a lot easier to control people who only get information from 15-second, 30-second sound bites on TV news, if they even watch TV news. Back in the 70s, Doug, I dated a young woman. She was a legal secretary. And I was having dinner one evening, and I said, well, let's turn on the evening news. She thought I was an intellectual because I watched the evening news on TV.
Nice. Okay.
That's a pretty low standard to become an intellectual, is to watch the evening television broadcast of the news. That's a very low standard.
And you might even say arguably incorrect, but go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Well, yes. Yeah. But in her world, that's all it took, because nobody she knew watched the evening news, let alone read a newspaper. Now, that's a big chunk of our society, unfortunately.
Well, now, and because of that, right now, the United States, as I understand it, we are ranked number 36, or we're 36 in the world in education, in terms of the quality of education. So you're looking at turning out graduates in the dreaded air quotes on par with North Korea or Cuba. And when you look at, there was a study done of 556 seniors from 55 of the nation's top rated colleges and universities were tested. They were given 34 questions they should have learned in high school. Now these are college graduates. The results were far from abysmal. 4 out of 5. They flunked the test outright. So, but you know what? Every one of them knew who the pop star of the day was or is. So there we go. And, you know, so American high school graduates, they're illiterates. And by the way, among the most, shall we say, victimized or sensitive illiterates in the world. This, according to The Closing of American Mind, The Closing of the American Mind by Alan Bloom. Interesting book. So the Vladimir Lenin, you know, that his dreams are coming true in America, sadly. John Moore, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Listen to him on RBN every Monday through Friday. All right. Go to thelibertyman.com. There you'll find the web presence for Mr. John Moore. Support John. Support his broadcast. Listen to him every day as well. Going to break back. We're up against the network break. You're listening to the Hagman Report, HagmanReportLive.com.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
welcome back to this edition of the Hagman Report. HagmanReportLive.com. That's the place to go. HagmanReportLive.com. That's the place to go for the radio, the audio, and the video. That's right. HagmanReportLive.com. Also, HagmanReport.com as well for pre-show articles, prep, contributing articles and such. HagmanReportLive.com. By the way, every Monday with me is John Moore, riding shotgun, riding together. We're horseback riding together. John Moore, TheLibertyMan.com. Straight from the Ozarks. A superb investigator, by the way. A veteran and a decorated one at that. And he's got a weekly or a daily, daily. Let's slow down, Doug. I'll get this. He's got a daily show on RBN. And that's, it's right there. Go to thelibertyman.com and you can get today's show right there. You see it? It's on the left. It's actually in the right on the front page there. And you click, you can drill down and get the archives of his show. By the way, I want to mention HagmanStore.com. That's HagmanStore.com for coffee. Three different blends, three different styles or types. The blends, of course, the hyper-caffeinated Detective's Choice coffee. You can get it in the whole bean, ground, or K-cups. They're all three. It's Detective's Choice for the hyper-caffeinated. That's my go-to coffee, by the way. And the Patriot blend as well as Revolution blend. Patriots and Revolution, hey, tied at the hip. And for guys like John and I, we'll take the Detective's Choice, I guess. That's HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com. Proceeds go to fund the on the boots on the ground efforts of Craig Sawyer and Russ Dizdar. So thank you so much for your purchases. That's HagmanStore.com. And thank you for everyone listening and everyone viewing. Thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate you. And I'll just mention this. And folks, I did not mention this at the beginning of the program just because both John and I suffered the losses last year, very personal losses last year. It's been a year today since my son died. I just want to thank everyone who has sent, emails and cards and letters, and thank you for thinking of him, and thank you for keeping his memory alive. And John, I know that you've had your share in the last year of losses as well, so I'm not gonna stay stuck on that, but thank you to everyone. Period. All right. John, during the break, we were talking, you know, hey, after the election, it's gonna get bad, no matter who's elected. We got some rough road ahead of us. It doesn't matter really who's going to be elected. It's just going to matter of the flavoring might differ. Your mileage might vary, but it looks like we're going to have a tough road here ahead of us, doesn't it? Regardless.
A number of people in the firearms industry and you can't buy a 9mm pistol from a distributor. The retailers can't get product. Everything's sold out. Ammunition prices are going up. So demand is driving up prices. You know, people are scared. When you see what's going on around the country with the Antifa and Black Lives Matter, people are scared, and rightfully so. And they're getting, the first-time firearms buyers are off the scales in terms of numbers. People buying a firearm who've never owned a firearm before in their life are now buying one because they're scared. Anybody who owns a firearm, if you have not had professional training, I would encourage you to seek out the instructor, a certified NRA instructor, or somebody with similar qualifications to teach you how to properly and safely handle that firearm, and to learn the laws of your state when it comes to proper use of deadly force, so you don't end up making a massive, life-altering, life-destroying mistake. And that's the times we live in, Doug. And the election is only 4 months away, 4 months and a few days. That will be here very quickly, very quickly. We've already had a recent case of, was it New Jersey, of massive vote fraud with mail-in ballots.
Yeah, Patterson, New Jersey. Yep.
And this whole mail-in ballot thing is very dangerous. They did it in Missouri for some reason. I think it has to do with the Chinese flu, of all things. And this Chinese flu has changed our society in so many ways. In fact, last week I came up with an idea that I don't know if I'll have time, energy to work on it, but to make masks out of minnow seine nets. You know what a minnow seine net is?
I don't even know what you just said.
Well, these are nets that you catch a minnow with. They have quarter-inch openings. It's a net. Okay. It's a fish net.
It's a fish net. Okay. I thought you were saying nut. Okay. Where's my mouth?
A minnow, I think it's spelled S-I-E-N-E, seine, minnow seine net.
Ah.
And so it came up, my Thursday guest lives in Arizona where the daytime temperatures get about 115 degrees in the shade, and they're required to wear a mask in public or get a misdemeanor ticket with a $250 fine if they don't wear a mask when they're out in public. So I said, Steve, why don't we start making masks out of minnow nets? Because it would be a look like a net, but there'd be nothing there really of any consequence.
Yeah, it's insane. By the way, when I had my procedure done today, I was talking to the doctor and nurses and stuff, and I said, "So, what do you think of the masks?" You know, and to the person, it's a bunch of crap. And right. I mean, they said this is ridiculous. Now, the masks have their places, but not as they are. It's ridiculous. And look, folks, don't send the emails. Look, I get it. I get it. And I know John gets it. All right. If short of, you know, sneezing or spittling as you speak, I don't know what you're expecting this to protect someone else from or what you're expecting to be protected from. I really don't.
And, well, a local business owner told me, he says, John, I've learned how to identify the liberals that come into his place of business. They're wearing masks.
There you go. There you go.
How about that?
Yeah.
And up there at the protest area in Seattle where they've taken over those six city blocks, I've noticed that all of them are wearing masks. Now, are they wearing them for protection from disease or to keep from being identified or both?
Well, you know, I was thinking after speaking with nurses and doctor today, I was thinking about this. What if we made masks out of the Confederate flag? Or put White Lives Matter on our masks? Or All Lives Matter? To be more precise, All Lives Matter.
Right.
What do you think?
It's a violation of U.S. Code Title IV to make a mask with the American flag. And, of course, the Confederate States of America no longer exist, but it's a misuse of something that should have some meaning behind it.
Whether it's
the Confederate States of America or the United States. I think it shows disrespect for any flag to use it.
All right. I'll draw the Confederate flag on there. Okay. Or heck, we don't even have to do that. But make it out of the Gadsden flag. That is some. Okay. All lives matter. We're back to that. So you walk in with hashtag all lives matter, or something else equally triggering to a progressive outlet store, whatever.
Cut the whole center out of the mask.
No, yeah, that's true too.
Just cut out the whole center of it.
You do that. But yeah, how to confuse a progressive? How to confuse a mentally disturbed, in my view, is in your view too, individual? How to trigger them? I mean, boy, wouldn't that be something? Well, he's got a mask on, but he's wearing a mask. I don't know, but yeah. So you're right, though. We started out this hour with, you know, 4 months to the election. By the way, any feelings on Donald Trump? I mean, if I was him, John, I wouldn't want that job anymore. I'm just saying.
Well, He still wants the job. He'll still do the right thing. I believe he'll start having more rallies, and they'll figure out how to keep the economies from making the attendance go down because of their false sign-ups that they've had. His base is just more motivated than ever, his base of support. I doubt Joe Biden can have fill up even a small auditorium unless they pay people to show up and bust them in. And there's a lot of speculation about whether Joe Biden will even be the candidate. I know people who are very politically astute. They're saying Hillary is going to come in and save the day at the last moment.
I've been saying that for a long time. And folks, you know, I've been saying that Hillary somehow, some way is going to find her way into 2020 because 2016 she was robbed in 2016. Now she's a pretty polarizing person. So I don't think she'll find her way in there. I don't think she could, like, for example, I don't think she could take a nomination, but I think at some point you'll see her serpent-like head pop up. You know, I really do. You're right.
Absolutely. The wicked witch of the West. Absolutely.
The literal.
So, ironically, she was the first one to publicly talk about Hussein Obama not being qualified to run for president because of where he was born. And ironically, it wouldn't matter where he was born. He could have been born in Bethesda Naval Hospital, but he didn't have two American parents, which still disqualifies him.
Right.
Because you have to have two American parents to be a natural born citizen.
That's right.
And even Fox News doesn't mention that. Even President Trump doesn't mention it. I don't know why, but it's true. He's a dual national. At the time, Kenya was a British protectorate, British colony, which would make his father a British citizen, which would make Hussein Obama eligible for a British passport because he is, in fact, a dual citizen.
Yes. And aside from all of that, and I truly 100% believe that Obama was ineligible, and therefore his presidency, I don't even call it an administration, I call it a regime. But having said all of that, you know, one thing about Obama that I don't hear anyone talking about, you ready for this? And John, I'm not sure if how familiar you are with this. I'm going to spring this on you.
Okay.
But the organization called Subud, S-U-B-U-D. I know you've heard of it probably. Maybe it's not on the tip of your tongue, but Subud. That is a, I just would urge everyone to search that word. Use a search engine. Type in S-U-B-U-D. Loretta Fuddy, who was the gatekeeper of Obama's birth certificate, no less, was a member of Subud. It's a religious organization. And take a look at the founder of that. Take a look at his picture and put it side by side with Obama. Just saying. It's, you know, goes back several decades, but nonetheless. So, but
oh, it's Islam. It's a part of Islam.
Exactly. Right. And the reason I brought that up at this point is because we were talking about the differences here in among people in this country and this fundamental transformation of America, which I believe that Obama brought in. So I'm looking at this. I'm thinking, okay, yeah, Islamic? Absolutely. But the Marxist communism? Yes, 100%. And Subud, by the way, is in line with that political ideology more than, I mean, it's an offshoot of Islam, but you get my meaning. I think you get what I'm trying to say.
Right.
The ideologies line up, but this is everything that's hostile to Christianity that we're seeing today. I can trace back, at least contemporaneously, I can trace back to the 8 years of Obama. And you're right. But you're right about the certificate of live birth, number one, and number two, the constitutional eligibility of Barack Hussein Obama. You're right about that.
Right. Well, the sheriff in Arizona appointed a team to look into that birth certificate.
Yeah.
And his analysis was so well done, so scientifically solid. It could not have been better. The FBI, the laboratory, could not have done a better job.
No. And, you know, I spoke with Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And of course, I've had Mike Zullo on the program, part of the cold case posse, and such. What I mean, you talk about insurgency isn't the right word. I guess infiltration of a government or of a foreign national into the highest offices of our government. That's it. And you're right. There's a forgery element to this. There's a conspiratorial element. There's so many different aspects to what we've seen. It's just incredible. It really is.
What is Sheriff Arpaio doing these days, if you know?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to him probably in a year. No, let's see. I haven't spoken to him in the last 11 months. So I'm not exactly 100% sure what he's doing, but I do know that they have not budged from their conclusions of that cold case policy where Obama was constitutionally ineligible, as well as the 9 points of forgery that right. Mike Zullo found. So yeah. And you've talked to these guys. Or at least had some communications with these people. So yeah. And here we are. But everyone laughed at us. Remember everybody laughing at you, at me? Oh, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Wrong points to argue. Or it's not the right, too conspiracy minded. Well, okay. It kind of reminds me, John, of people today saying, well, you know, trust the plan and Donald Trump's playing, you know, three level chess and don't worry about it, or three dimensional chess. Don't worry about it. Trust the plan. Indictments, you know, a gazillion indictments and it's coming. The rest are coming. Yeah, my butt there.
Well, there won't be a gazillion. There may be a dozen, maybe two, but, and hopefully they will happen. The next 4 months is when they really need to be happening, before the election. At least one major one, I would hope.
Let me ask you, as an investigator, okay, because now you're dealing with the Department of Justice now. And okay, so here it is. We're days away from July. Next time you and I speak on air is going to be July. So my question to you, John, is what, from an investigative point of view, can they, meaning the Department of Justice, make any significant arrests this close to the 2020 presidential election? I'm going to say significant arrests, James Comey, or, oh, I don't know, John Brennan.
Back up a bit. Significant indictments.
Indictments, I'm sorry, charges, whatever. Yes, indictments.
Yeah, that, it needs to happen. The attorney from New York appointed with the big mustache, what's his name?
Durham.
Yeah, Durham. He's been at this now, I think, more than a year, hasn't he? I believe.
Actually, I think it's been 16 months, 17 months. Yeah.
16 months. Okay. Well, that's with the full resources of the Department of Justice and the FBI, I think they've had sufficient time to issue subpoenas, take statements, and come to conclusions, I would hope, to issue indictments. That should have been the case. I hate to second guess the team of investigators and what they're doing. One possible reason to delay might be where they're leading to, and they don't want to blow their cover in terms of what they're finding out in their investigation so they can get all the indictments that they want to get before people flee the country and go to a safe haven that doesn't have extradition with the United States. Because at that level, people easily and can do such a thing. There are countries that don't have extradition with the United States. And
I'm looking for one right now. I'm looking for one. And anyone want to buy me a one-way ticket? Eric the Tech. Eric the Tech and I are leaving. I'm taking our dogs with us to a non-extraditable country. So I'm kidding, folks. John, I'm going to pay for saying stuff like that. You know, I mean, people are going to take me seriously. I'm serious. I guarantee you people think I'm serious when I say that. Anyway. All right. So, but yes. Okay. So the other thing too, they could be running out the clock, or in a sense, the deep state could be running out the clock given the social tinderbox we find ourselves in right at the moment. Do you think? I mean,
well, you don't know how many, and special forces, when we leave people in a country, when we abandon the country, we call them stay behinds. And, we don't know how many stay behinds there are in the Department of Justice left over from Obama. That could be, slowing things down, sabotaging things. We simply don't know because they would be obviously hidden and secret about who they are and what they're doing. That's certainly a possibility, Doug.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. So let's compare that in a sense. The potential indictments of the deep state actors to, let's drop it down to kind of a, a different level, a county or a state or a local level. Let's look at the Department of Justice in terms of the Lafayette Square monument attacks. You know, the equestrian statue across from the White House, when you had Attorney General Bill Barr talked about their department's effort to coordinate with the National Park Service to identify the people who tried to take down that statue. Folks, you remember that. And I remember watching that on TV last weekend, not this past, but the weekend before. Well, okay, so what happened? Now we saw today, or no, when was this? It was over the weekend. It could have been Saturday. It might have been Friday. I don't know. Department of Justice announced 4 suspects to be charged. 1 is under arrest and 3 are on the run. And, that was, so that was a press release. Lee Michael Cantrell, 47 of Virginia. Connor Matthew Judd, 20 of Washington. Ryan Lane, 37 of Maryland. And Graham Lloyd, 37 of Maine. They were charged by criminal complaint with destruction of federal property. All right. But when you look at the number, John, and here's my question, roundabout question. When you look at all the people that they identify or that they have on this, you know, wanted poster, for lack of a better term, I'm not seeing a whole lot of arrests. I'm seeing token arrests. So I don't know. I guess my question is, are we trying hard enough?
Well, of course, you and I aren't the ones that are trying, obviously. It's frustrating. We want to see results, we want to see it soon. A major case takes, as you and I both know, at least a year to do proper trial preparation,
sure.
Minimum.
Yeah.
And they're past that time. And I never had the resources of the Department of Justice or the FBI, obviously, to do the work I did. I was basically on my own for the most part with whatever resources I could come up with. But it would be awesome to have that kind of ability to have the full resources of the Department of Justice and FBI at your fingertips, wouldn't it?
You know something? I got an email. Yes, to answer your question, yes. I received an email, this was this past weekend, to ask you about it was a long email. As a matter of fact, it was from a retired police officer on the other side of the country, closer to you than me. However, the question that he wanted me to ask you was about your resourcefulness. How did you personally function before the era of personal computers, before Facebook, before people were putting their entire lives on the internet? Before social media, I should forward this email to you, but he wanted me to ask you on air about that, because he recounted some of his own experiences where he had to really, be resourceful. So I just find it very interesting, and it got me to thinking over the weekend too, and it got me to thinking that, my goodness, you know, back in the day, it was different.
Yeah, it was. It was a matter of being active in the community. Whenever I would meet anybody, law enforcement, attorney, business person, I would always get their business card. And I kept a file of all those business cards. I belong to, and I still do, professional associations of investigators and, we would network, it was a networking opportunity. I was always aware of developing new contacts. And even if I was at a family birthday party, for example, if I found somebody worked for Monsanto, for example, that person became a contact inside Monsanto. If I found out somebody worked for the, St. Louis University, because of a, and they became a contact. And it's just a matter of networking and meeting people and working, developing your Rolodex. And people know people. So a very dear friend, she worked at St. Louis University most of her adult life. But she knew all the movers and shakers of St. Louis U. So if I needed something from St. Louis U, I would simply call her. And she could give me a referral to the right person to talk to, as opposed to guessing. The attorneys I work with, they had their own networks, and I would have relationships and friendships with these attorneys, and I could contact them if I got stuck on something. I knew a personal injury lawyer had a working relationship with people that I needed to know, that I would simply call the attorney and ask for the referral.
You know, I would say to people, I would contend that you've forgotten more about developing contacts and sources than most people ever will know. And the reason I bring this up now, and I think it's important to have right now, is because we're living in a time where people are so dependent upon Google, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or whatever electronic medium that people are using right now, that they have forgotten to develop sources and contacts outside of their computer screen. And I think with what's coming, this is not just a trip down memory lane for John Moore and Doug Agman. This is for what's coming. I think we're going to need that. I think we're going to need that interpersonal relationship and developing sources and contacts outside of the computer in order to really survive what's coming. That's what I think.
Yep. Well, I agree, absolutely, and I've been doing it. I learned as a young soldier how important contacts were in the Army to make things happen. And there's an old saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that's always proven to be true for me, always.
You know, John, you're right. And I remember, and this, folks, you can do this too today. If I needed, if I needed a court record, now, generally speaking, you know, as an investigator, you go down to the courthouse, you go into the clerk of courts, or depending on if it's criminal or civil, you go into a specific room, and you let your fingers do the walking through the indexes, and then you go to the file cabinet, and that's the way it used to be. Now they got computers. But even back then, I don't know about you, but I could pick up the phone and say, you know, hey, Cindy, can you do me a favor? And then I'll, you know, to buy a cup of coffee, or I'll bring you down donuts some other time. Can you, you know, Ryan, give me this record or that record? The same with banks.
Absolutely.
This was frowned upon a little bit, but nonetheless, hey, can you give me an account number and tell me, you know, can you tell me how much maybe this guy has in the bank? You know, or if you don't want to do that, let me ask you, if I wrote a check for $50, would it fly? How about 500? How about 5,000? You know, there are different ways to ask the question, you know. So anyway, that's kind of what I was getting at. So people need to know that, I think. That's just me. I mean, but I think we need to do this, cultivate those contacts now while we still can.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that can be very valuable, to say the least. And in some future date, it may be extremely valuable, maybe even a matter of life and death. That's certainly a possibility at some future date. We don't know what's coming at us. We know what the possibilities are. You know, we hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
Exactly. Yeah. And that goes for, you know, hey, you need some ammunition. Most people who listen to this program, I would say, in your program as well. But by the way, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, that's the website. I think most people are into that interpersonal relationship. And I'll bet you that most people who listen to us are taking our advice to heart. This is the third week running now that you mentioned. I'm keeping count of this, that you mentioned about taking a gun class. Do you know that that's hit home? That's hit home for, I mean, I don't want to overstate or understate this. Hang on a second here. Okay, here it is right here. I have actually 3 women and 1 man who have emailed me. I'm looking at this right now. Over the last 2.5 weeks, because of what you had said, have signed up for or have completed gun handling classes. And actually there's different types, but so, you know, I think people now are listening to what we're saying. So that's a good thing. They're becoming more prepared, but anyway,
that is good. That is good. And that's very heartening to know that we're having that kind of positive effect. People that don't own a firearm, they think that there's, I don't know what they think, but they don't understand how to properly handle a firearm when they may or may not use deadly force. They usually get themselves in very deep trouble, life-threatening trouble very quickly, couldn't they?
Yeah. And as we saw at the beginning of the program, look, God bless those attorneys in Missouri, St. Louis. God bless them for coming out and having the presence of mind to protect their lives and property against this mob. Now, however, they could use a gun handling class, and if they already took one, maybe a refresher, so we don't muzzle our wives or our husbands. And yeah, exactly. So, all right, I don't know where I was going with that. Stop me. Am I still talking?
That's okay, Doug.
It's been a rough day, man. But you know, how do you, oh, let me ask you this. How do you think this war, defunding the police? Because again, this morning when I was getting this procedure done, I was talking to my doctor, and my doctor said to me, he said, by the way, he said, "You're angry." I said, "You're doggone right I am." But he said, these people, meaning the people, not, I mean, when he said these people, he was talking about the liberals.
Right.
To be clear, just so I don't offend everybody. He said, they better hope that they don't get what they wish for. And he said, no police department or a defunded police department, how is that going to work? What do you think about this whole defund the police movement? Because Obama started that. If you really want to know, go back to the early days of the beer summit thing. There was discussion back then of defunding police departments. Oh yes, there was. But aside from that, how do you think this is going to play out? Like in places like Minneapolis.
It won't take long for people to figure out it was a massive mistake. I believe the city council's already hired private security to help protect themselves. And, of course it'll be a massive mistake. I mean, the proposals and the mayor of St. Louis got a stack of letters, with those similar proposals to defund the police and spend the money on a bunch of silliness. If it happens in Minneapolis, it will demonstrate very quickly to the rest of the world how stupid that idea is. And there'll be loss of life and loss of property as a consequence. Of course there will. And that will go on for a short period of time. Then they'll reestablish order somehow, some way with a new police department. And life will go on.
Interesting. Interesting assessment. Life will go on. Maybe not in the same fashion, but yes, life will go on, I suppose. You know, when I mentioned about Obama and defunding the police department, when you look at things like, you go back during Obama's first couple hundred days in office. St. Louis, by the way, there was a former St. Louis police chief. Who talked about the general cultural degradation that was being excused at that time by Obama and by the media and the power structure. Because talking about anything, for example, talking about crime, talking about black-on-black crime, you would be labeled as a racist for even noticing, for example, that it's occurring. Remember the knockout game? Remember that?
Oh, yes.
All right. Yeah. I mean, things like that. And remember Eric Holder, too. Him, my goodness. He pressured the public school system to be more tolerant of black misbehavior. Don't send them to prison. And what are we seeing today? Calls in Target by even white people say, don't call the police on black shoplifters. It's crazy. It's just crazy. I don't know.
Right. Well, that's why, you know, in the industry it's called shrinkage. Shoplifting is called shrinkage. And, many.
Not to be confused with the Seinfeld shrinkage of George Costanza in the pool. I was in the pool! Shrinkage.
Regardless, many stores have abandoned inner cities because the shrinkage gets to be excessive and they just can't conduct business anymore. And that's what's being demanded. It was a Target store in New York City, I believe, were demanding that police no longer be called for shoplifters.
Yes.
Was it just black shoplifters or all shoplifters?
Actually, this occurred in two different stores. One in New York, one in Washington. And isn't it interesting how the message is the same by these two different groups? Yes, it's black shoplifters. It's not white shoplifters. And when you look at this crowd chanting this and making these demands, I'm going to say 50% maybe are white individuals.
Right. Well, Antifa is mostly white. A large percentage of Black Lives Matter is white. They're all communists or supporters of communists, even if they don't know it. And, so it doesn't surprise me at all. The typical white communist grew up in an upper middle class environment, a child of privilege. They grow up hating their parents, hating their privilege, hating who they are, and they become communists as a consequence. I've known a lot of these people, Doug.
Man, I'll tell you, we're in for it. The headline after headline after headline, John. It seems more dire all of the time. And I mentioned Chicago.
That's because it is.
You're right. Yes. And by the way, three children were among the 16 dead, 47 injured this past weekend in Chicago shootings, just as an FYI. And can you imagine John, the youngest victim killed in Chicago. Now think about this. A young child named Sincere Gaston. Okay, now I don't know what nationality that is. It doesn't matter. It's a child, a 20-month-old child, shot in the chest while riding in his car seat, and his mother was grazed by a bullet. Can you imagine? Now think about that, folks. Can you imagine that? And John, oh my gosh, the heartache.
It would be a hard thing to live through. Having that happen to your child, it would be extremely difficult, to say the least.
And you know, and what are we doing? I mean, seriously, an 8-year-old girl was also shot. She was sitting on her couch inside her house at 66th and Southwood in West Englewood. She suffered a grazed wound to her head, but now she survived. But three children among 16 dead, 47 injured. That's Chicago. And you said it before, Afghanistan's safer.
Unfortunately. Well, something I noticed working the streets is that children in the ghetto can identify the caliber by the report of the weapon, the sound of the gunfire. They can identify what the caliber is.
Can you do that?
That's a pretty sophisticated thing that very few people can do, but they're exposed to it so much that they have that skill.
Okay. I don't know how many people actually took a class or took ballistics, and you listen to the report, and yeah, I mean, so you're familiar with that. Can you identify the caliber by the report?
To a certain extent. Yeah.
That's sad that we have to.
And I mean, being quickly able to identify incoming rockets from incoming mortars is an important skill also. If you're in combat.
If you're soon to be. Let me ask you this question. Since you're familiar with Chicago and even St. Louis to, again, a lesser extent here, but, years ago, you're looking at maybe, I don't know, 3-4 decades ago, you had a handful of very tightly structured, very disciplined gangs running things. They had their own turf, pretty much. They respected boundaries, you know, the Crips, the Bloods, or whatever the case might be. And now we're seeing everything goes, right? This is not that. Whatever we're seeing is not that. Okay, this is not gang violence. This is just anarchy and innocents getting caught up in the savagery out there. I mean, that's what we're seeing. I don't know.
Well, it is anarchy. On the face of it, it is. And my heart goes out to people who feel stuck and can't get out of these dangerous places. I think the cities are lost myself, and the only real solution is just to abandon them to the criminals, let the criminals have them. That's my opinion. It's of our own doing. Policies put in place, and I'm repeating myself, decades ago. These are the consequences of policies put in place by white politicians that have destroyed these beautiful, magnificent cities that we had, have been destroyed by these policies.
Yeah. Well, by the way, what am I, chopped liver? Please ask John Moore about the shootings in the CHOP district, or the CHOP. I don't even know what that word is. I think you misspelled a word there.
And yeah, pride zone.
Yeah, this goes out to, or this is from Keith, but wants me to ask you about the CHOP, the occupied zone in the police station, abandonment of the police station, given your history. Okay, thank you for clarifying that, given your history in law enforcement or with law enforcement. What's your whole take on the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, CHOP?
Well, whatever. A lot of things came together for that to happen. We have a liberal / socialist mayor, who made it clear more than a year ago that she was not going to have the police enforce the law when it came to things like this. And, so the communists have taken advantage of that. Police precinct station house that was taken over, that was a clear sign of surrender, quite frankly. That should have been held at all costs, in my opinion, with whatever force necessary to keep it from being seized. It sends a message to the communists that they've won when you abandon something as critical as that, as important as that. The meaning of abandoning a police station is very strong, the message it sends to those who oppose us. Now, have there been more shootings over the weekend there in that district?
There was one man is dead. Yes. By the way, I'm reading this. Now, this is from PJ Media. This was published this morning. And the way I'm reading this, let me just be clear here. It appears that yes, one man was shot. Let me go back to this. I want to be clear. Yes, it looks like another person was shot in the Chaz district or the Chaz zone, redundant there. And the Antifa leaders plan to move into the police station, the abandoned police station. Again, this is from PJ Media reporting.
Right.
This.
I got the article here in front of me. For the time being, the police station has just been abandoned, but they plan on taking the communists plan on taking it over, apparently.
Yeah, and I thought, honestly, I thought that place was, I thought the Department of Public Works went in there and moved the barricades, but apparently I was wrong. Apparently I was a little bit premature on that. So apparently they're still there.
The city workers went to remove the barricades, and when they met resistance, they were ordered to leave. Obviously, they need a police presence to be able to pull off something like that, which they did not have.
If you were mayor, John, how would you handle this? I'm just curious. I know how I'd handle it.
Well, as far as
gritty, but
yeah, well, I would have if my police department wasn't up to it with enough men and equipment, I would bring in the National Guard. I would have the governor or the National Guard to restore order. That's what I would do.
At least there's some, at least you still have a attached set of, you know what. So that's right. Isn't this kind of like, I mean, think of it in the sense of the Civil War when you had the Confederacy versus the Union Army. I mean, isn't, in a sense, couldn't an argument be made that we're looking at the very similar situation here when you've got a foreign occupied, or I shouldn't say foreign, but an occupied zone within the United States? Shouldn't you treat it as like a foreign occupation or not? I mean, or is that too easy?
Well, we're giving recognition of something that is not something that can, you know, Confederate States of America was a country with a postal service, a currency, defined borders, an elected government, and the rule of law. None of those things apply to CHOP. They do not have anything that could be recognized as part of a organized formal government, in my opinion. It's anarchy with a some kind of musician leading the charge, who apparently is connected to Islam extremism. It's chaos. It's anarchy. I think it's a disservice to the Confederate States of America to make a comparison.
Okay. So, and thank you for that clarification. So what I'm hearing you say by extension is that there'd be no constitutional, legitimacy to President Trump, for example, getting involved in handling that situation on a federal level.
He has no jurisdiction. The jurisdiction may be people who cross state lines to go there.
True.
That may be some handle on that. Washington State has been Californicated, and my daughter grew up in Seattle, and she really lives in Metro Seattle, and they're tired of Californians coming up there and changing their culture and changing their society. A lot of that is due to the relocation of Californians to the state of Washington.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Okay. So, again, looking at this, and maybe I'm just digging too deep into this, and maybe I'm just beating my head against the wall. Kent State kind of, is the media looking for a Kent State moment to use against President Trump? And by Kent State, I'm talking about the, you know, Ford Dead in Ohio, 1970. Situation. Is that, I mean,
if that opportunity presents itself, of course they'll use it. There will be bloodshed. That's the events that are taking place cannot continue without people dying. That simply says it can't happen. And if there's a way to turn it against President Trump, the mass media will do it. Of course they will. That's a given.
Okay. Yeah. So I thought, well, I mean, this is a case where I believe that the residents of that city are getting exactly what they voted for. And, you know, how do you like it? Not everyone, of course, but the majority. And, you know, how long can you persist in this insanity? So, yeah, but look, here's what I think. I think, look at what happened in St. Louis in your backyard, front yard, whatever you want to call it, John, with that attorney couple. And, It's coming to your neighborhood. So get ready.
Apparently they're quoting, the Seattle Times is quoting the CHOP people as wanting to take over the precinct as a bargaining chip for pressuring the city on police reform.
Whatever happened to Yale negotiated with terrorists?
Well, that's U.S. government policy, and the city of Seattle is not the U.S. government, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, look, if you are
negotiating with criminals is certainly appropriate. Well, they don't have anything to negotiate with. Taking over an abandoned building is not much of a bargaining chip. They think it is, but that's not going to give them the kind of leverage I think they're going to get.
Just when you think it can't get any crazier. I don't know. Well, I can't believe this. We've just been talking back and forth. I've been doing most of the talking, of course, but, and again, you'll forgive me, folks. It's just been one of those days, and medically induced procedure earlier today. So if I don't sound like I'm on my game, or if it sounds like I've got too much coffee in me, that's because I probably do, and I'm probably not. So anyway,
I don't have a K cup coffee maker, so I'm gonna get some of the K cups and the Detective Special coffee.
I'm gonna send you out some. You know, I'll tell you what though, there's nothing better than the French roast of the dark roasted Detective's Choice. That'll put some hair on your chest. But anyway, look, we got about 8 minutes left, 7 minutes left. So I've been doing most of the talking. You tell me what in the last seven.
Well, I want to encourage people to get their spiritual house in order. That's the single most important thing they can do when it comes to the times we're facing, and work on skills. First aid skills. My grandchildren and 13-year-old grand twins, they just took first aid class last Tuesday, given by a local paramedic, and CPR. CPR, if you haven't had it in 2 years, it's different. They change it every few years. So get those skills. Get kits where, I went to the dollar store and got all the first aid supplies to build individual first aid kits for my grandchildren. They worked on organizing those last night, getting them all organized. And besides first aid and CPR, get ham radio skills. These radios are not as easy as a cell phone to use. Just because you own one doesn't mean you know how to operate it. You need to be able to intercept all the emergency frequencies. Police department, sheriff's department, fire department, paramedics, even the city workers, and utility companies. So you know what's going on in your neighborhood, in your county, in your state. You don't want to be sitting in the dark, not knowing what's going on. It's human nature for your mind to go to the worst possible scenario if you don't know what's really going on. So at least be able to get a good quality scanner that can intercept all these frequencies. Now, many police frequencies are now, using digital scrambling, but most of these other services are not. The paramedics, the fire department, and so forth, and that could be valuable information, even if you can't listen to the police department. But that needs to be done. It needs to be done now while you can. These 4 months will fly by, Doug. The first Tuesday in November is just 4 months away, and people need to make whatever final preparations they need to make now for food, water, medical supplies, ammunition, whatever it is. Do it now. You have to sacrifice to get the minimum things. Get the minimum things. Food's going to become a weapon. Whoever buys a family groceries can tell you that. The food prices are going up dramatically, and they will continue to go up. So buying long-term storage food, at least rice and beans, if nothing else, would be a really wise thing to do. And do it now while you can.
That's right. And you know, John, you don't make any money by talking about this. You don't have a line of freeze dried food, do you? Or do you?
No. Okay. Well, I got a sponsor, but I haven't talked to him in a year.
Okay. All right.
He's not really a sponsor. He just does advertising on my website.
All right. Well, the reason I bring that up is because no one's in this preparation.
They're all sold out anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Hey, they don't have anything left to sell.
you know what we should do is although we don't have, I was going to say sell some of a surplus ammo, but there's no such thing. But boy, you know, I've got a box of 9mm I'll sell for about $50. No, I'm joking, but seriously, get prepared now, folks. You really need to do it. And you really need to do that. And, you know, on Amazon, I did notice, John, that some of there are some kits, or you can police supply houses. You can buy first aid kits already assembled if you want to go that route. If you feel like you're out of time and you need something a little bit more than just, you know, 4x4s and gauze and cling. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. Well,
those kits are available, and people need to be getting them.
Amen to that. Well, all right, my brother. I'll tell you what. It was a fantastic show. I appreciate your conversations. And, again, I'm going to start forwarding. I should have done this earlier, but some of these emails of people, you know, wanting your take on some historical events. But I thought you I thought your contribution.
Absolutely. I'd be glad to look at those.
Yeah. Because again, you've forgotten, I do suspect you've forgotten more about developing and making contacts and sources than most people know to begin with. And you're a legend. So I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you, what you do, and we'll be talking again soon.
Sounds good, Doug.
All right,
look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, folks, that's going to wrap me this program up. By the way, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com, that's the web presence for John Moore. You know, downer of a program, right? In terms of, not really, it shouldn't be, because we do know, I think as Christians, that we know how all of this will turn out. We've got to hit our knees. We've got to be in prayer. We've got to pray. We've got to pray like never before. I'm telling you, that's the answer, or one of the answers. And we can't be afraid of the gospel. We can't be afraid of the Bible. Look, I'm not a minister. Oh, man, I'm the furthest thing from ministers run from me, okay? Just ask Pastor Langford. I'm kidding. He's such a great, great man. I love that man. And by the way, we're going to be doing some programs together when our schedules sync back up again. But look at what's taking place right now. We're not going to be able to fight this in the physical and the practical alone. We didn't even talk about the global situations. Did you know that Iran swore an arrest warrant for President Trump? Eric the Tech, did you know that, by the way? Yeah. I guess he's not going to be going over to Iran anytime soon. And in fact, they actually asked Interpol to assist in executing the arrest warrant against President Trump. And that has to do with Soleimani's demise. Boy, how would you like to be President Trump right now? Man. Get it from every direction, right? Oh, and one thing I should bring up as well. The Obama regime. Yeah, they provided security for Hunter Biden on over 400 trips during the Biden years. Just saying. Oh, and you know, John Moore was talking about institutions that house the criminally insane. Well, did you know that there was a shooting in Jefferson Square Park at one of those protest rallies? Well, guess what? The Twitter lit up and social media lit up. It was a white supremacist. No, it was a Hispanic homeless man with a history of mental problems. Just saying. Oh, and another thing too. You know, we talk about churches being on the chopping block or in the bullseye of Black Lives Matter, communist revolutionaries. Black Lives Matter. They attacked a Christian prayer group in St. Louis with clubs. Did you see that? That's something you're not going to see on CNN. And I'm sure Rachel Maddow is not going to tell you about that. Tomorrow. Have a great show lined up for you tomorrow. Guess who's coming on? Randy Taylor. Guy that was in studio the last time I think he was on. Intelligence. Contacts. That's tomorrow, along with Stan Dale. And have a good rest of the week lined up for you as well. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in this platform, in me, Eric the Tech as well. And thank you. And folks, thank you for reaching out and remembering my son, Joe. I really appreciate it. May God bless each and every one of you. Good night.